In the following podcast, Robert Garrity, a former EJP student, talks about the Carceral Communications Framework, the CCF, and how it operates in prison life.
The CCF describes a system that attempts to control the way in which communication happens within a carceral space. It puts limits and punishes for things that you could otherwise speak with outside of the space, but if you speak about inside of the space, when it threatens the security of the institution, it suddenly becomes not okay. So the administration and the rules attempt to create a sense of fear within people who are doing time about what they can safely say or not, that affects true dialogue, that affects speaking your mind, because you, especially in an educational setting, don't want to get the teachers or professors in trouble, or the program you might be involved in, or yourself in trouble. It's easier just to not speak about certain topics and certain issues, even though they affect your life every day.
So how did they go about instilling that fear?
Well, they set examples, and they attempt to create vocabulary like fraternization or dangerous communication, and those rules are punishable by certain consequences. You might not know what fraternization exactly is or what dangerous communication exactly is, but you know what the punishment is. And that fear that goes involved with just knowing, like, damn, I could spend a year in segregation for speaking ill about the way in which the food is being served, and I can be interpreted as creating a dangerous situation by getting other people to side with me. So therefore, instead of doing that, I'll just keep my mouth shut or not talk about it so that I don't have to face those consequences.
So how do they tell you what fraternization is or what dangerous communication is?
The problem is it's ambiguous, and it's a judgment call on the part of staff. You just don't know, and so out of fear, because you don't know, you just forego a lot of the normal human communication that you would do in the outside world.
Do you see that operating sort of with all people you encounter on the inside?
Well, I mean, I think that depending on how long someone from the outside comes in, they learn to negotiate and learn when it's acceptable to have those conversations if they feel comfortable with having them. I think people who are brand new coming in and have just been through like training and are, you know, if they're an officer, they've gone through their academy and they've been trained in specific ways, or new volunteers, they're trained in specific ways, not as much as correctional officers. They have that hesitancy. They have that, they don't know what's okay, they don't want to break the rules, they don't want to get in trouble, they don't want to get you in trouble, and so they break off conversations that you may think, you know, you're having and it's fine, but all of a sudden they get this clock in their head that maybe they've been talking to you for a bit longer than would be seemed appropriate, and therefore they break off the conversation. And that's what I believe the Carceral Communications Framework is. It has a lot to do with power and a lot to do with fear that is instilled within the minds of people who go in and out of those prison gates without it necessarily being written in stone as a rule or being told, hey, what you're doing is wrong.
So this operates not just on people who, not just on incarcerated people, but it's reinforced as well by the volunteers or the people who are in the positions of power.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily, it sounds like you're saying, not necessarily because they're here to reinforce the system, but because there's almost fear operating on them as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think that the system benefits from there not being a written list? A piece of paper that said, here's what's acceptable and here's what's not?
Yes, because it creates that ambiguity where you're unsure of what would be on the list. So therefore, you're hesitant to talk about really anything that's subversive, at least to the administration. So even talking about the quality of the food and the dietary, you would think, well, naturally, if the quality of the food is bad, this is something we would want to struggle against. But when that struggle becomes united in any way, that's a threat to the institution, and everyone involved will be removed, placed in segregation for, you know, instigating a riot. Like, at what point does speaking up and being an American citizen and standing up for your rights, that your fundamental rights that you think you possess, and getting your fellow man to assist you when you don't know, you know, when you can safely say something and how it'll be interpreted, you're just better off not saying it. And that's what I'm saying happens often, that a lot goes unsaid more than that goes said, simply out of fear.
Since the CCF has such a profound effect on silencing communication, we asked Rob to elaborate on how this affects communication between incarcerated people.
Well, a lot of times what will happen is that you're always within earshot of people who will report any suspicious activity, and it doesn't have to be prison administration. So you have to be very careful, like when you're going. And anywhere you go is public. So if you go to the chow hall, you're in a line of people, and you're constantly surrounded by people. So you're always careful about what you say, because you never know who's listening. And they don't have to be wearing a uniform.
So what you're saying is reminding me a lot of Foucault's Panopticon.
Mm.
How is the CCF a different idea from what Foucault already put forward?
Well, Foucault had much to do with visual lines of sight. So he talked a lot about, like, where the observer's mirror was darkened in the bubble, and that an inmate could not see whether or not they were under observation. So it was very lines of sight. And the Panopticon was designed in a way so that all cells were visible from a center surveillance site. And so when you think about the difference between visual and, you know, being able to be heard, then it's different. So communication, although it takes form, you know, visual cues and, you know, stuff like that, it's also something that can be done without seeing the other person. So, like, I could talk to you through the vent and never see you, and we could... And I've done this in segregation, where you're completely isolated from the rest of the population. You know, some people play chess through the vents or through the chuckles. They never seen each other a day in their lives, but they're in communication. So what the CCF does, though, is it focuses not necessarily on the visual, but on the, you know, audio, on the being heard and things like that. So it's a little different.
It's also, it sounds like it's decentralized in a way that the Panopticon is about, like,
very true.
This idea of this central post that might or might not be watching you, mm-hmm. where in the CCF, it's the people around you that are helping
very
structure.
True. That's a great point.
Another question I would have then is, we were talking a lot about speech and speech communication. How does the CCF deal with writing?
writing is something that is very dangerous when you're inside, because once somebody gets their hands on it, you can't take it back. When you've written something down, it can't leave the institution legally unless it's been screened by either the mail person that sends out your mail, internal affairs, or personal property.
So it sounds like within this carceral setting, to write something down is a very committed act.
Very. And it's an act that most people are willing to not do, at least if they think they'll get in trouble for it.
Writing across media offered a somewhat unique opportunity for students to explore the possibilities of multimodal writing. Because this was such a unique situation, we wondered how multimodal writing fits in with the CCF. How do things change when we are talking not about print-based writing, but about comics, podcasts, and graffiti?
Especially with graffiti, just the word sounds subversive. You know, and like, when you commonly think of graffiti, you think of being subversive. You think of making a comment on a situation or marking territory in a way that signifies it's yours. And I think when the institution thinks of the word graffiti, they're thinking of it in those terms. They're thinking of it in ways in which criminal things happen, and not necessarily a social commentary on a situation that is an effective way to speak against or resist something. So they're automatically in the door when they hear that word, are anti-graffiti, you know, because they're just in positions of power and they don't necessarily want to feel like taking the time to understand what an academic exercise on graffiti would be. And so I think the problem with trying to offer those types of things in a college classroom that takes place with inside of a prison, you're going to have a lot of students that sure have a lot of things they'd like to say, but won't do so simply because they know that anything that they commit to paper, which you're going to have to do, like I said, becomes evidence that can be used against you. So anything you commit to paper is, you have to be very thoughtful and very careful on what you commit to paper. Because when a professor brings it outside and tries to pass it through the security, he or she may not even turn it in, but it may be observed by a member of the staff that will confiscate it, and there's nothing that professor can do to save you. There is nothing he or she can do to say, oh, but they didn't mean that, or, you know, it's just over with. And other forms of modality, I mean, simply don't exist. Like, you don't have the ability to record your own voice inside of your cell, or take videos of the inner workings of the prison, or take photographs. You always have to have someone from the outside who has clearance to do such a thing, and you know that everything that they record, videotape, video record, is going to be viewed by internal affairs.
One thing that has been sort of threaded through a lot of the stuff you've been saying is that at an individual level, the corrections officers, the instructors, the volunteers do not necessarily see themselves as enforcing this system. Like, the COs aren't out there to maintain the CCF exactly, are they?
No. And I think that's why the invisibility of it distinguishes it from maybe the Panopticon and Foucault's work, and why it's, although he did speak about, Foucault spoke a lot about the invisibility of power and surveillance and how invisible that, it works in many of the same ways, but it also has is distinguished by the fact that it's so subtle and it's so wrapped up in ambiguity, whereas the visual surveillance isn't.
It sounds like the CCF is something that's working both on the incarcerated people and on everyone else.
Yes, and
that everyone is almost, I don't want to say a victim of it, but
Foucault did speak about too how it did work on the prison administrators who also thought they were observed by their superiors, and how even they, the correctional officer on the floor, is in a position to be observed by someone else, which makes, and it's a chain that keeps going up, and so in a way it also affected staff in a weird way.
So is the CCF only in place to prevent activities that are dangerous to the prison? So gang activity, riots, like, why is the CCF there?
Well, I think there's two things. It's the security of the institution, which I think is the point of emphasis, but there's also the idea of reform. So reform through fear is like, if all the instincts in me to be subversive are to a higher power or to the government, or we'll compare the government and we'll compare the prison administration. If all those instincts get squashed out of me while I'm doing time, then when I do get out, I'll have lived my life so long being afraid of getting in trouble and being subversive to the powers that be, it also transfers into reforming me as a citizen that obeys the law, that obeys the government, that does stuff like that. So I think there's two effects. One is the actual safety and security of the institution, and the other is an individualized reform. And I don't know if reform is used in a positive or negative sense, because we ultimately, if we're in a country, we'd want citizens who are law-abiding, whatever those laws that we would think are fair and just, even unless you're an anarchist or whatever. But I think that there's that aspect of it too that goes overlooked or isn't looked at enough. And like you even mentioned, do we feel its effects now? Free Americans sitting, do we feel its effects? Are there things we can't say in our article? Are there things we shouldn't say out of fear of getting someone else in trouble? Like, it's the same thing.
Throughout the many conversations we had with Rob and the other students about the CCF, we could see why understanding this concept is important to incarcerated people and people who work in prisons. Here, Rob talks about the broader importance of the CCF.
Well, if you believe in the notion of freedom, and when I say freedom, I mean the human spirit being able to express what it's feeling in ways that are meant to improve the human condition, then I think anybody who has concerns that there are Americans, whether they're in prisons or not, who don't feel they can use the freedom of speech, which is a right that we've chosen to say, it's an inalienable right, then I think that anyone concerned with ways in which communication is adversely affected or hindered by structures of power would take an interest in this. And I think anyone who goes through the system, whether they're confined or whether they work with people in prison, whether they work for prisons, once you really start to think how it affects you in invisible ways, it's something you can choose to either resist, perpetuate, or negotiate.